It's Saturday, the 23rd of April, 2016. Happy birthday to Gail Goodrich. Red Rock Basketball Monster Show brought to you by Loot Crate and Harm 214. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be like Harm 214 and sponsor the podcast for a day, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can become that sponsor. Also, if you are watching on YouTube, clicking that thumbs up goes a long way to helping the show as well. So if you are watching, just a quick click would be awesome if you could do that. If you're watching live on YouTube, and you can do that for every show that goes out, tweet your questions or comments at me at redrock_bball. You can see that Twitter handle underneath my face at the moment. So again, if you are watching live, tweet at me any questions or comments you have during the course of today's show. We're going to be looking back at the three games from Friday. We're going to be previewing the four games on Saturday. Kind of a quick chat about Scott Brooks going to Washington. Not a huge amount to say there, but we'll touch on it. So
let's get to it.
We'll start with Scottie Brooks heading to Washington, and I don't know how much it moves the needle, to be honest. Randy Whitman struggled as a coach for a long time. His best success as a coach came in the playoffs last season, where he abandoned his terrible offense for a more modern form, tried to do it this season, didn't have the players in position to do it, and didn't have the right setup to do what he was trying to do anyway. It was sort of admirable that he decided to go with the times and try and make things a little bit more three-friendly, a little bit more up-tempo, but the players and the injuries didn't help him as well. As for Scottie Brooks, we know that he has struggles with offensive plays, but is that somewhat because he had Durant and Westbrook there? We've seen Billy Donovan have the same sort of issues, late-game execution with those two guys. Is it just because they just go, we're just doing what we want? We'll have to see what Brooks can do. He made some terrible rotational decisions at times in his tenure with the Thunder, starting Kendrick Perkins for as long as he did, starting two zeros in a starting five with Thabo Sefolosha, Andre Robertson in his last season, and then Kendrick Perkins as the center is almost unforgivable. But he's not a horrible coach. He's not Kurt Rambis. He's not Byron Scott. He's well-liked by players. He's good for player development, and I think that can be handy in Washington as well, especially for a guy like Brad Beal, maybe taking John Wall's game to the next level. I think he'll help Markieff Morris as well. Maybe Otto Porter takes a step forward under Scott Brooks. He's not the coach that gets him to a title, I don't think, but I think he is an upgrade over Randy Whitman. What it means for fantasy, I think that a lot of the Wizards guys get an uptick. I really like what Markieff's going to do there next season. I think that John Wall, he's going to remain that same sort of level, end of the first round guy. Bradley Beal, it all comes down to injuries. And Porter, I think, who did fade in a big stretch at the end of the season, picked it up towards the last couple of weeks. I think he takes another step forward under Scottie Brooks next season. Again, so much has to happen. Drafts, free agencies, trades, all that sort of stuff has to go down before we really get a grasp on what is going to happen. But it's not a horrible move from Washington. I don't like the fact that he was I think he was the only guy they interviewed. That's a shit process from an organization, and it really frustrates me when that sort of stuff happens. We can say the same in Phoenix. It looks like we're going to say the same in New York as well. That's a really bad process, and that's the biggest part of what I don't like about it. Get someone else in there. Get some other differing opinions in there. Try some new blood as well. And you heard me talk about that on yesterday's podcast. We're going to talk about the games from Friday now. We're going to look at the monstrous DFS line of the night, and it goes to Kawhi Leonard of the San Antonio Spurs. Leonard played 42 minutes in a game that was a lot closer than I think many people envisaged, as the Spurs got the victory by 9, but it was a lot closer than that towards at the start of the third quarter. Leonard had 32 points. He hit 6 triples. He had 7 rebounds, 2 assists, 4 steals, and 5 blocks on 11 of 22 shooting. He went 4 of 5 from the line, and that totaled 61.4 FanDuel points. When I talked about him yesterday on the podcast, his salary was massively appealing, but it was like, Can the Grizzlies keep it close? And I said, if the Grizzlies keep it close, him and Aldridge, they're going to be guys that you like using. If they blow it out, then he's going to play 27 minutes. And that was the concern. The Grizzlies kept it way closer than anyone could have anticipated. And Leonard came through with probably the best performance of the entire playoffs. That's a complete performance in every single category. He's all over the board there, doing everything that was necessary. And that's the sort of talent that this guy is and what he can do when he has those minutes. we might see him back to the 25-minute mark in Game 4, depending on if the Grizzlies capitulate after this loss. This has to have been their best chance at sneaking one game off the Spurs. Let's look at the best DFS value play of the day, and it goes to Boston and my boy Jonas Jerebko, who got the start. He played 37 minutes. I couldn't have loved his performance any more than I did. 11 points, a 3, 12 rebounds, 4 assists, a block. That totaled 33.4 FanDuel points. At minimum salary, we're talking over nine times value. An absolutely superb performance from Jerebko. He was a guy that I talked about as a punt option on yesterday's podcast. If Olynyk was out, I did really like him. I didn't expect him to move into the starting lineup, but it worked a treat. He opened up the court. He had some sizzling behind the back passes. Well, he had one sizzling, but some of the passing in that Atlanta-Boston game was tremendous. Jerebko's behind-the-back pass out to Terry Rozier. Al Horford's catch in midair 180 overhead pass to Cole Korver for a three was ludicrous as well. That game was very entertaining, and we saw a lot of chippiness happening, and we'll get to that a little bit later. But Jerebko was great, and if he remains at minimum salary and he remains in the starting lineup, which is all a big possibility, he's going to have tremendous value moving forward. On the other side of things, the biggest DFS dud of the night was the guy that Jerebko replaced in the starting lineup, and that was Jared Sullinger. He moved to the bench. He played just 11 minutes, and at 5,600, he was a guy that I was totally against using, so hopefully you didn't use him. He had 4 points and 4 rebounds for a total of 10 FanDuel points. A horrible night from Sullinger. And given how well Boston played with Jerebko in the starting lineup, I think it's going to be hard for Sullinger to even push back to 20 minutes, because if Olynyk comes back as well, this is a great series for Olynyk. I've been calling for him to get playing time. They've used Jerebko in that spot, and I don't think it's going to allow Sullinger to get much playing time. So any value that he had is falling apart at the moment. Okay, let's talk about today's sponsor, which is Loot Crate. As you're well aware, Loot Crate has been sponsored the podcast for a little bit now, and thank you to everyone who has gone across to our unique URL, which is lootcrate.com/redrock. If you don't know by now, Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service. It's for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. It's less than $20 a month, and every month you get between 6 to 8 items, including licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, and unique one-of-a-kind items. Each month, it goes up until the 19th of each month for that month's specific box. This month's April's one has finished now. It was a quest theme box. They'll be working, the boffins over at Loot Crate will be working feverishly to try and get the new one up for May, and we'll get to see what that is the next week or so. But you've got until the 19th to get that month's box. Otherwise, it is gone. It disappears into the ether forever. We have a unique URL, as I mentioned, that is lootcrate.com/redrock. So if you're interested in Loot Crate or you know someone who is interested, don't go to that boring old lootcrate.com. That's bullshit. That's for the posers. Go to lootcrate.com/redrock. That's where the business is. That's where the party happens. Go over there. Use our coupon code REDROCK as well to get $3 off any new subscription. Pretty good deal. And in doing so, just by visiting that unique URL, you are helping this podcast grow. You are helping me show advertisers the power that this podcast can have. So go across to that website, just check it out. Even if you think, you know what, I'm not a geek, I'm a tough guy, I'm a big man, just do it. Just check it out. We're all a geek inside in some way. So go across to lootcrate.com/redrock and check out what's happening over there. Let's now take a look at the perfect DFS lineup from Friday's games. At point guard, Reg Jackson went for 38.8, and Isaiah Thomas with a career-high 42 points. He scored 49.3. When I was talking yesterday, I was talking about the play of the point guards, and I like Jackson, I like Kyrie Irving, and Teague and Thomas were two guys I also liked. Thomas was the most expensive point guard on the board, but he really came through. A huge performance from him. At shooting guard, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope went for 30.1. And Evan Turner, he moved into the starting lineup with Avery Bradley out. He took the spot that was held by Marcus Smart. He put up 36.9, and he has been tremendous this season. Supremely underrated. Big performance from Turner. At small forward, Kawhi, as I've touched on already, 61.4, and Matty Barnes had 38.2. I knew there was a big game from Barnes coming at some point in this series. He'd been dreadful in the first two. He was a big part of getting the Grizzlies close in this one. At power forward, Kevin Love at 36.4 and Jonas Jerebko at 33.4. And the center, Al Horford, 43.6. Continues to just be a really amazingly reliable center play in DFS. That lineup would have gotten you 368.1 points. One other thing that I should have touched on a little bit earlier is that CJ McCollum was named most improved player for the season. I'm completely fine with that. You heard on the awards podcast, myself and Matt did, that I went with Marvin Williams because I really was more impressed with what Williams could do at that advanced age. But I knew that McCollum was going to win it. I can't argue with it. He would have been my second pick. I love that Kemba Walker came in second because I've been a massive Kemba Walker fan for quite a while. So congratulations to CJ. Congratulations to Kemba Walker. Definitely not as controversial as the Jamal Crawford pick. All right, let's get into these games. Let's look at them in a bit of closer detail. The Cavs and the Pistons. The Cavs, again, the game was close. The Cavs broke away towards the end. Love was great, 20 and 12. Irving had 26 points with 4 assists, and LeBron went 20, 13 and 7. Big performances from all of the big three there. J.R. Smith struggled, 9 and 9 with 3 triples, and Dellavedova, including a ridiculous assist to Kyrie right at the end, for Kyrie to hit that 3-pointer falling out of bounds along the baseline with 0.7 seconds left on the shot clock. A great assist from Dally. He went 12 points with 5 assists. And Jeff Van Gundy reckons that Dellavedova is going to get $10 million a year next season. I would be stunned if that happened. It feels like, yes, I know there's a lot of money going around, but $10 a year for Dellavedova. Yeah, he's a real handy backup point guard. And look, Detroit would absolutely kill to have Dellavedova on their team as their backup point guard over someone like Steve Blake. But $10 million a year feels a little rich. Tristan Thompson, at least he played 31 minutes. He grabbed 10 rebounds, had 2 blocks. That's sort of the performance you can expect from him. 8 points, nothing too exciting, but it was okay. And not much else happening in Cleveland. On the Pistons, it's big minutes for the starters again, except for Andre Drummond, who played just 27 minutes. And Van Gundy was pissed. Drummond played just 27, 17 and 7 with 2 blocks. He was 1 of 6 from the free throw line. He sat down the stretch. Van Gundy's at this stage, and I don't really know why Van Gundy's so pissed at Drummond. He had to deal with Dwight Howard for, you know, most of his career. Yes, Drummond's a worse free throw shooter, and he's not as good defensively or offensively as Howard. I understand all of that, but the sort of talk that's coming from Van Gundy and the way that he's played him in this series and the way that he limited him down the stretch of the regular season, very interesting to see what happens in restricted free agency for Andre Drummond. Yes, the Pistons will still max him out, but if they didn't, I wouldn't be completely surprised. Or if he went somewhere else, or if they signed and traded him, I wouldn't be surprised. That's not true. I would be surprised. It is not an absolute zero chance of happening, though. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, 3 strong games in a row from him, 18 points with 4 steals. Jackson had 13, 4, and 12. Toby Harris and Marcus Morris were both good. And Stan Johnson looked pretty good limited minutes. 14 minutes, 9 points and a 3. Didn't do a huge amount. Looked good in a real short burst, but that's sort of what he's going to be able to do at the moment. He's not going to be able to produce massive amounts of form or massive amounts of hot streaks of play, but he does what he does, and he's the best of the bench mob in Detroit at the moment. Good to see that Reggie Jackson played 39 minutes, so they only had to play 9 minutes of Steve Blake, and that's what needs to happen for most of this time. The next game is Atlanta and Boston, and Dean Vasek has just tweeted in a question. He goes, based on previous experiences, is Thomas a good chance to get suspended? I reckon he is. I reckon he's probably going to lose a game here. The game was really odd. The last flagrant call on Dennis Schroeder was absolutely terrible. There's no way that should have been a flagrant, but some of the other ones weren't ideal. I think I'd say he's more than a 50-50 chance of getting suspended, Dean. I don't know if you're watching live, but yeah, I'll answer you in a tweet later on. But yeah, I do think that he's a fair chance to get suspended. Let's look at this game though, Atlanta and Boston. Horford only scored 8 points, but he had 13 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals, and 4 blocks. And one of those blocks was a joke. He just smashed Jonas Jerebko in the hand and got credited with a block. Ridiculous, but anyway, it all counts towards his stats. Jeffy Teague went 23, 2, and 5. Korver had another 5 triples for 17 points. They need to work out what to do with Korver, and it could have been more if he hadn't have fouled out in 29 minutes. Bazemore was great, 20 and 8, and Millsap only 8 points as well. 10 rebounds for Millsap with 2 steals. So on a night where Horford and Millsap combined for just 16 points, the Hawks lost by just 8. That bodes well for them, I think, moving forward, because those two guys will have to be better than that. A guy who won't be better than what he was in this game is Dennis Schroeder. He played 22 minutes and scored 20 points. Didn't do a huge amount. He was quite reckless early with some of his shooting, but it came good. Pretty nice performance from Schroeder, and we all know how much of a per-minute animal he is in fantasy leagues. If he gets a chance to start, he is definitely a top 50 player. Mike Scott is getting a lot of minutes off the bench, 21 here for 6 points. Thabo Sefolosha, 2 steals and 2 blocks, that's really handy. 1 point in 20 minutes is not all that great. on the Celtics. Isaiah, 42 points with 5 triples. Not much else from Isaiah, but 42 points is 42 points. Evan Turner went 17-2-7 with 5 steals. A massive night there. Amir Johnson played 31 minutes, and I think he's going to have to play 30-plus minutes on most of these nights. 15-7 with 2 blocks for Amir. Marcus Smart on the bench was still pretty good. 11-3-5, 2 blocks and 2 threes. So the move to the bench didn't really impact his minutes, and it appears clear that Terry Rozier is going to get the minutes that Avery Bradley lost. He played 17 here, went 5-3 with a 3, and RJ Hunter only got 7, and he looks a little bit lost out there. Jay Crowder was really bad. He was 1-4 from the free throw line. He was 1-11 from the field. He did have 8 rebounds. He did have 3 steals. He did his bit defensively, but offensively he was really struggling, and we talked about Jared Sullinger as well. The last game of the night, the San Antonio Spurs and the Memphis Grizzlies, and I can't remember exactly when it was, maybe at the end of the third quarter, the Grizzlies had this weird thing where they had 3 bears out there wearing Spurs gears. One had a shirt on that said go, another one had a Spurs jersey on, another one had another shirt on that said go. So they stood in line and said go Spurs, Spurs go. And then the Grizzlies' actual mascot would come out and they escorted these fake mascots off the court with security. Then they appeared up near the media area on this area, started dancing around their Spurs top. The Grizzlies' mascot came out with a chair, gave chair shots to 2 of these bears, picked one up, body slammed him through a table, then climbed up a ladder, jumped off the ladder onto the table as well. It was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. As soon as I saw those Grizzlies mascots dressed as Spurs up on that podium, and there were 2 tables there, I went, this is Dudley boys. It's happening. These guys are going through tables. Then the Grizzlies guy came out, slammed him through. It was amazing. I couldn't believe that I was seeing it. I couldn't believe the Grizzlies mascot was jumping off a ladder onto these tables. It was insanity. There are clips all over Twitter. Go and check them out, because it was something that I couldn't believe I was seeing. Anyway, back to the game. Now, LaMarcus Aldridge played 33 minutes. He had a 16-10 double-double with a block. Timmy Duncan, only 14 minutes for Duncan, not his best night. 6-3 with 2 blocks, still handy. Manu played 27, 11-3-5. Danny Green had 11-4 with 3 triples and 3 blocks. That's a very Danny Green sort of game. Tone Parker dished out 7 assists. Kyle Anderson played 14 minutes. Paddy Mills played 20. This is sort of what we can expect from the Spurs, I think, moving forward in the other series when things get closer. We're going to see lots of Kawhi, lots of LaMarcus Aldridge, obviously, Manu and Danny Green, Duncan, Diaw, Parker, West, Mills, and Anderson. That's going to be the rotation. Kevin Martin was out sick in this one. John Simmons played just 2 minutes. Andre Miller, Matt Bonner, Boban, these guys aren't going to play when the games get close. Onto the Grizzlies, Matty Barnes, 17-11 with 2 steals. Zebo went 20-11, and they both played big minutes for the first time in this series. They kept the Grizzlies really close. They kept them in front for a lot of the game as well. Big performance there. Jermichael Green, he only played 13 minutes, but it had 10 points. He's struggling to get much playing time throughout these playoffs, has yet to top 20 minutes. The Grizzlies reversed course with their point guards. They went with Jordan Farmar for 33 minutes. He went 7-2-6, while Xavier Munford just played 15. He went 7-4-2. So overall, the production from the two is relatively similar. But if the minute disparity is going to be that big, it's going to be tough to use Munford in our DFS lineups. Vince Carter played 26 minutes. He went 11-8. Lance Stevenson continues to be bad. At least he got 22 minutes, though. 8-3 in 22. And Tone Allen played 36 minutes and was basically unusable. That is the games from Friday. Let's transition now and talk the action from Saturday. We have got, how many have we got? We've got 4 games on. So it's a busier game. It's probably a little bit easier and a little bit more diverse DFS lineups you can put out there. Instead of picking from 6 teams, you're picking from 8 teams. And that's obviously a 33% increase in the amount of available players there are to fill out your lineup. I think there's quite a bit of value happening as well throughout these 4 games. So let's talk about those now. Before we do that, though, just a quick break for a word from one of our sponsors. All right, the first game is the Raptors and the Pacers. The Raptors are favored by 1.5, and the total is 193 points. A low total. The Raptors smashed the Pacers in games 2 and games 3. I reckon there's a big chance they get another victory here. George Hill had a decent game in game 3, his first decent game of the series. But he's averaging just 14 points across the 3 games in this series so far. Had 21 in the last game. He's at 4,500, but point guards have not fared well against the Raptors for majority this season, and George Hill has not fared well himself. So all in all, it's not a good situation for him. Kyle Lowry is at 8,300. He got close to 40 in the last game, putting up 38 points. So I'm okay with using him, but there are some better point guard options out there. Whereas if I'm spending cheap at point guard, 3,700 for Corey Joseph has to be worthwhile. He's averaging 23 points across the three games in this series. He's played exactly 24 minutes in all three of those games. So you'd expect at 24 minutes a game, you're going to get 20 points from him on most nights. And he's going to be... He's going to be useful, and he's backing up the one, he's backing up the two. We saw Normie Powell almost eliminated completely from the rotation in the last game, so he's not too much of a factor, nor is Ty Lawson, who played just 7 minutes in the last game and totaled negative one DFS points. At shooting guard, DeMar DeRozan, he's still at 7,600. He had 30 points in the last game. That's not too bad, but he is really struggling in this series. The Paul George matchup is not working well for him. So it is hard to use him. He's not a cash game play. He's a tournament punt, but I reckon you can find a better option at that salary. Monte Ellis is now down to 5,800. He only had 18 in game one, and those first two big games he had, they felt like anomalies. I'm not keen on using Monte Ellis at 5,800. Solomon Hill, the minutes keep coming from Solomon. He's averaging 27 minutes throughout the playoffs so far. It's only giving him 14 DFS points, but at 3,700, you're looking for a cheap option in a tournament. Those minutes, in one of these games, they're going to convert into a 24, a 25-point night, and it's going to be useful. So I'll be really looking steadily at Solomon Hill and really considering him for tournament options. Rod Stuckey at minimum salary, no thanks. Terrence Ross, barely seeing over 10 minutes a game. Normie Powell down to minimum salary, but the 3 minutes that he played in game three is not an encouraging sign. If you think that Powell gets back up to big minutes, then of course, use him at minimum salary. But the fact that Damari Carroll played 35 minutes means that I'm not all that interested. Carroll at 4,800, that's a really nice salary for a guy who could or most likely will play 35 minutes. He had 25 points in game three. I would imagine at 4,800 you'd want to get him into lineups. And I love Paul George at 9,000. He's averaging 45 points across the first three games. He has to do everything offensively for this team, basically. And you'd expect 40-plus points from him in pretty much every opportunity that he gets out there. CJ Miles, he played 8 minutes in the last game. Not someone I'm all that interested in. Let's look at the power forward position. Miles Turner was great in the last game. He put up 33 points, but he's back up to 5,500 in salary, and that just feels too high for a guy who really struggled through the first couple of games. If it was 4,800, 4,700, absolutely, I'm all for it. If we hear some news that Yamahimi is still really battling the back problem, which is a massive possibility, then I am more on board with Turner. Or if we hear that they're banishing Lavoie Allen to the bench, which is another massive possibility, I'm all for Turner in that situation. But if Allen's going to start again, if Mahinmi is fine, then it's hard to use him. Now, Pat at 3,900, only played 26 minutes in game three. He had 15 points, but he is a chance to go for 20 to 25 points on a good night. So at less than 4,000, he always has to be considered, whereas Luis Scola and Lavoie Allen, they don't have to be considered. At center, Jonas Valanciunas has been an animal in this series. He's at 6,400. He's averaging 36 across his first three. He only had 26 in the game three, but he only played 27 minutes. The game was over. I really like Valanciunas at 6,400. Mahinmi at 46. He's battling injury too much. I can't get behind using him. And guys like Jordan Hill are not factors. Miami and Charlotte, game three in Charlotte. The Hornets, they desperately need a victory here. Kemba Walker is at 8,000. Well, the Hornets are actually favored by 2.5 here, which is a bit of a surprise. The total is 200.5. Kemba Walker at 8,000 had 42 in game two. I can really see Walker at 8,000 being a decent buy if you're looking to spend up. I would rather take him at 8,000 than Kyle Lowry at 8,300. Walker, especially with Nick Batum out, Walker is going to have to play a lot of minutes. He's going to have to handle the ball a lot. It's going to hurt his field goal percentage most likely, but we're not really too fussed about that in a lot of DFS formats. Goran Dragic at 6,800. He's been fine. He hasn't been spectacular though, so I don't mind looking at him. But at 6,800 on the road, can he get 35 points? That's sort of what you want him to get to, and it feels like just a little bit of a stretch. He had 28 in game two. Now the backups, Jorge Gutierrez, Aaron Harrison, and Briante Weber, they're not moving the needle, and Tyler Johnson's been ruled out again. At shooting guard, no Jeremy Lin, so Steve Clifford's got a couple of ways that he can go. He's hinting towards starting Frank Kaminsky, which will move Marvin Williams down to the three, and we'll talk about that soon. But the other way he can go is run Jeremy Lin out there as a starter. Now, they could do that, But Lynn has been torched defensively by the Heat, and that is a concern. But at 4,200, you'd have to think he gets an uptick in usage and an uptick in minutes. And at 4,200, I can absolutely get behind that. He ended the season with a 52-point game in the regular season in 39 minutes. He won't get that many minutes, but he could easily push to 30, and I really love him at 4,200. Courtney Lee will also get a bump in minutes. He had 20 points in game two in 42 minutes. He's at 3,900. He has to be considered as well. Joshy Richardson at 43. I would take Lynn and I would take Lee over him for less salary. So Richardson's probably not a guy I go for. Now Wade at 7,600. Brilliant in game two. He's averaged, well, he got 48 points there. He's at 7,600. You can get him or DeMar DeRozan at that salary. I would take Wade given the matchup and given the way that he is playing. At small forward, I've already talked about Batum being out. Justice Winslow at 3,500. It's minimum salary. He's putting up just okay numbers. He has 16 points in the last game. It's okay. And he's got the ability to go for 20+, but I don't love it. He's not a cash game play. Joey Johnson has struggled a little bit as well here. 4,800, but you feel a big game from Johnson is going to come, so he always has to be in your player pool for tournaments. Let's look at the power forwards now. I really like Frank Kaminsky here. If he's going to start, he's at 3,500, 20 points, it's not much. And then, he has struggled so far in the series, but he's going to have to take more shots if he's in a starting role. And he's going to have to pick up some of that offense that Batum takes away when he's not there. So Frank Kaminsky, I really love him at that minimum salary cost. Marvin Williams has been dreadful. He had just 9 points in the last game. He's averaging only 11 across his last three. He's down to 5,000. So him at the 3, maybe moving him to the 3 if Kaminsky moves to the 4 helps him. Because he definitely has struggled in the 4 in the first two games. So at 5,000, I reckon you can definitely consider Marvin Williams. Luol Deng at 6,700. He's been okay at that sort of salary, but not enough that I'm stumbling over myself to use him. At center, I really like Hassan Whiteside here. He's priced pretty high, but at 8,600, it's not out of control. He had 39 in game 2. He's averaging over 40 his last three games. I think that he's going to put up a really efficient and a really big performance, especially if the Hornets keep it close. Cody Zeller's at 4,400. He's really struggling to get minutes at the moment. Not someone I'm massively keen on, especially if Kaminsky and Jefferson continue to get some playing time. Oklahoma City and Dallas is the next game. The Thunder are favored by 9.5. The total is 202 here. This is a game 4. We could see another beatdown. That game 2 feels like a massive anomaly. Russ Westbrook at 10,500. He had 49 in game 3. He's fine to use at 10,500 if you've got that extra cash around. I would rather save it and use it on someone like Kemba and save that 2,000 for other positions. But if you've got 2,000 spare based on who else you like in your lineup and you've used a couple of minimum salary guys, say a Courtney Lee and a Frank Kaminsky, then you've got extra salary for Russ. Fine, use him. Darren Williams is questionable with his hernia. I would say he's more leaning towards doubtful. So that means Ray Felton at 5,600 has to come into play. He had 32 points in the last game. He's averaged 28 across the three games so far against the Thunder. You have to consider him, and you have to consider JJ Barea at 4,800 if Darren Williams happens to be out. If Williams plays, I don't mind Felton still at 5,600, but obviously my bullishness eases off somewhat. At shooting guard, Wes Matthews had a big 34-point performance in Game 3. He's priced at 5,000, so a little bit of a raise in his salary. He's a tough cash game guy to rely upon, averaging just 22 across the first three games. But he can put in some big performances, and he's going to get as many minutes as he can handle, assuming the game stays close. So he's worth a look. Deion Waiters, I did say at some point Deion Waiters is going to have a big game, and he did it in the last one. 28 points at 3,700. That means it's real tough to expect him to do that again. Sure, tournament, absolutely, he can go in, but in a cash game, it's really tough to rely upon. Devin Harris, with the return of JJ Barea in the last game, he dropped down, only scored 9 points. We're not going to be too keen on using him. Small forwards, Kev Durant at 10,200. Much the same as what I said about Russell Westbrook. He's been okay in this series. He hasn't been spectacular yet. He hasn't had to be. You know, the two victories, they've been pretty comfortable victories. He did get 45 in game 3, so that's pretty handy at 10,200. I would rather Paul George, though, at 9,000. Justin Anderson, 3,800. It's going to take injuries for him to get 20-plus minutes, and that doesn't look like it's happening at the moment, so he's not of interest. Power forwards, I do like Dirk here. He's at home again. Could be the last time he's at home this season. He's at 6,900. He had 37 in game 3. I think another 30-plus point performance from Dirk is something that's coming up. Dave Lee at 3,600. He played 17 minutes in the last game. Not interested, though. And Serge Ibaka at 6,000 has been sensational in this series, averaging 32 points. He's been really consistent. I like using Serge at 6,000 in cash and in tournaments. At centre, it's Enes Kanter again for me. He's priced at sub 5,000, which is very appealing. 4,700. He had 36 in the last game. He's averaging 28 in the first three games. He's an absolute animal. Yes, he might have a stinker, which he did in game two, but he's been fantastic. Steve Adams at 43, not that interested. And Salah Mejri and Zaza Pachulia with the return of David Lee are almost impossible to play now. Both of those guys got under 20 minutes in the last game. The last game of the night is a game three between the Clippers and the Portland Trailblazers. Both of these games have been very, very ugly. So it's hard to rely upon the game staying close. But it's headed back to Portland. The Clippers are favored by just 1.5 points. So maybe this one stays closer. And if that's the case, then 9,800 for Chris Paul. He's going to get 45 points. It's almost guaranteed in that sort of situation. So you're okay in that spot. Dame Lillard at 8,200, he's been eaten up in this series. I don't like using him at that sort of salary. And Austin Rivers at 3,500, it takes an injury for us to really care there. At shooting guard, CJ McCollum, fresh off his most improved player award, has been bad. He got just 25 points in the last game. At 6,900, he's been swallowed up by JJ Redick and the defensive pressure of the Clippers. Not keen. JJ Redick at 4,400, that salary is dropped, but he is going to be limited in his minutes. He's still dealing with heel issues. I'm not interested there. While Jamal Crawford at 42, I don't hate using Jamal Crawford at 4,200 just to get me 20 to 24 points, but I'm not excited about it either. Gerald Henderson and Alan Crabb, They've really struggled. Henderson had a good game one, terrible in game two. Small forwards, Al-Farouq Aminu's at 5,500. I really like him at that salary. He had 28 in game one. He's taking a shitload of threes. Eventually something's going to hit and he's going to have a big game. He can do it defensively. He can grab rebounds. Who he's matched up against on the wing against the Clippers is definitely no great shake. So I consider him as a really good option. 5,300 for Mo Harkless feels a little bit high. So I'd probably spend the extra 200 and take Al-Farouq. The Clippers wings, Paul Pierce, Jeff Green, Luke Marmute, Wes Johnson. Almost impossible to use any of those guys. They're basically just cannibalizing each other's minutes. Power forwards. Blake Griffin's at 9,100. He's not playing big enough minutes because he hasn't had to yet, and that might be a trend that continues. 9,100 is just way too much for me to consider investing in Blake at the moment. Ed Davis has struggled, and he's not getting many minutes, so he's out of action for me. And we look at the center position where there's a couple of good guys to look at here. Mason Plumlee was great in the last game. He put up 46 points in 33 minutes. He's at 5,600, so if you're looking for a mid-price center, he's the one to go for. Whereas DeAndre Jordan at 8,100, if he gets 36 minutes, then you're going to get 40-plus points. So Vegas thinks the game will be close. If you think it'll be close, then DeAndre Jordan is right up there with Hassan Whiteside with the center that you want to go for. If the game's a blowout, then my boy Cole Aldrich at 3,600 is actually averaging 22 FanDuel points across his last three in just 12 minutes. Sorry, in 17 minutes. In his last game, he put up 22 in 12 minutes. He can do a stack. It's really tough to rely upon him, but maybe in a funky tournament lineup, you want to save some cash, put Aldrich in at 3,600, get your 20 points, and boost up the rest of your lineup. It's a risky proposition, but it's something that's not completely crazy. Let's look at the DFS picks of the day now. At point guard, Corey Joseph, 37, Ray Felton, 56, and Kemba Walker, 8,000. Shooting guard, Jezza Lynn at 42, Wes Matthews at 5,000, and Dwayne Wade at 76. The small forwards, Damari Carroll, 4,800, Al-Farouq Aminu, 55, and Paulie George at 9,000. Power forwards, Frankie Kaminsky, 35, Dirk Nowitzki, 69, and there is no high-priced power forwards that I'm interested in. There is Blake Griffin, but I'm not interested in him. At center, Enes Kanter, 47, Mason Plumlee, 5,600, and Hassan Whiteside at 8,600. Good luck in your DFS lineups. Good luck to your team in the playoffs. I hope you've been able to make some cash throughout these playoffs so far. Follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball and basketballmonster at baskmonster. You can always hit me up on Facebook as well, facebook.com/redrockbasketball. And if you're watching on YouTube, give the video a thumbs up. It does help tremendously. Subscribe and leave a review in iTunes as well. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.